everyone, and welcome to Spicy Friday. First things first, I'm Jenna Wolf. That
wild.
Is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carr. Oh, is that an Air 5?
No.
Okay, sorry. There you go. This is Nick Wright right here. We got a big weekend of football to set up for you on the program today. Bizarro world in the AFC East as the Patriots look to beat the division-leading Dolphins. Eric Reed has found a new home with the Carolina Panthers. His new teammate Greg Olsen will join us to discuss that. And Thursday Night Football on Fox. And what a show that was, guys. Let's start right there. Vikings at Rams and the full-on aerial attack at the Coliseum. Yeah, I hope Jared Goff recorded the game. Rams quarterback finished with career highs of 465 yards, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions on the night. The first Rams quarterback with 5 TDs since Kurt Warner did it back in 1999. Goff finished with a perfect passer rating. So the Rams are now 4-0 for the first time in 17 years. We will get to the Vikings side of things in a bit, but first, here is the quarterback, Jared Goff.
We were kind of getting everything we wanted in the run in the pass, and just the way the game was going, I think we knew with the way their offense was moving the ball, we had to score a lot of points, and sometimes that's the way it goes. But, you know, either way, we put up points. Sometimes, you know, we go down there and Todd scores a bunch of touchdowns, and sometimes we throw them. So it's just the way our offense is.
At the end of the day, I think he's just throwing the ball extremely well. You know, he's able to, you know, when things are in rhythm, he's been outstanding, giving guys a chance to run after the catch. And then you look at a couple of the plays where we ended up running some bootlegs, and he's going to his left, getting his shoulders around, hitting Cooks in stride, hitting Robert Woods. So there's a handful of plays that he made tonight that are just a great player making great plays. But then also when things were there in rhythm, I thought he was outstanding.
All right, CeCe, we talked this week that the only thing standing in the Rams' way was going to be the Vikings' defense. What do you think the key was to the Rams beating this Minnesota team in a shootout last night?
Sean McVay's going to get a lot of credit, and he deserves a lot of credit. When you can have the type of impact on a young quarterback the way he's had on golf, you have to give the coach a lot of credit. His play calling is sensational. His ability to be able to keep the defense off balance as far as motions, the way they target. Robert Woods, I think, had 10 catches in week number 3, came out for the first part half of the game, didn't do anything. They were featuring Cup, you know, and a little bit of Cooks. So then the second half, they decided to go back. And the reason why they can do that and have that variance in who's going to get the ball is because of golf. He's the difference maker. It's not any of the free agent pickups. It's not Todd Gurley. It's not any of the wide receivers, because all that would be good. And we have other teams that have some of those things. But if you don't have the trigger guy, which they have in Jared Goff, and I don't think people understand how bad he was as a rookie. Now, people will criticize who the coach was then, and you know, you can look at that as an excuse, but his overall development as a quarterback, people came into the season saying, man, this guy's a game manager. He is everything but a game manager. His ability to be able to throw the ball in tight seams, be able to vary the velocity on his throws and his accuracy where guys can catch the ball on the run, that was what I saw the difference in the game last night. Jared Goff is a big-time player. Last night on one of the biggest stages, Thursday Night Football, we're launching here on Fox. He was amazing. I think he had 4 touchdown passes his rookie year. And how many did he have last night?
He had 5 last
five
night.
Touchdowns.
His rookie year was one of the worst seasons. And it wasn't a full season, but it was close to it for a first-round pick, much less a #1 overall pick we've ever seen. It did not seem like you were jumping to a conclusion to say, oh, he's a bust. He's a disaster at the #1 overall pick. And then last year, he was very good. But because of who he was his rookie year, I came into this year. What was the only reason I was a little trepidatious about the Rams? I wasn't sure about Jared Goff, because I'm all about the talent.
It's not that you weren't that sure about him. You just said, okay, was last year an outlier? And can he grow from that?
Correct.
Like, what's going to be his
floor? Or does he not take a step backwards?
You go. Because we hadn't seen it. So that was justified. There weren't people saying that, hey, you know what people were saying? Hey, Carson Wentz there going to Philadelphia was a lot smarter pick.
100%. And so because I wanted to be all in on the Rams because I love the way they did their offseason. Now, let's not worry about personalities and locker rooms. Let's acquire talent and figure it out. My only hesitation was Goff last year was an A-. Is that an outlier? Is he really a B-level quarterback? Well, this year he's been an A-plus level quarterback, and you're right to give him credit. Last night was the best individual game a Rams quarterback has ever played. No one since Norm Van Brocklin has had that many touchdowns and no picks. Keep in mind, Kurt Warner played there with the greatest show on turf. Like, yeah. They've had some very good teams, but it's to me, and you alluded to it, it's not just Goff, even though he was great. How many of these touchdowns are you going to see where he's got a wide receiver with Anthony Barr running on him? That is some of their pre-snap stuff. You broke it down to me before the game because I felt like Barr was getting a bum rap on Twitter. I was like, you can't ask Anthony Barr, who's an excellent linebacker, to cover Cooper Kupp, to cover Robert Woods.
Jen, I had the smart guy attacking me. Hey, Chris, oh, hey, you watched the game? Yeah, I stayed up and watched the whole game. Yeah, I saw you tweeting and everything. Uh-huh. Did you get any sleep? I got a little bit of sleep because I was up watching the Ryder Cup. Okay, I got these plays. They're on my computer and everything. Yes. You got time?
That's exactly what happened.
You got time? I got four plays. Tell me what happened right here.
That's exactly what happened because
let
I
me
saw.
Wake up.
Right. Because I saw Cooper Kupp get matched up on Anthony Barr. And that, Mike Zimmer's too good of a defensive coach. They're too good of a defensive team for that to be the plan. Like, okay, we're going to have Anthony Barr cover Cooper Kupp. You saw, right there he's on Gurley. Here, he's on Cooper Kupp. On a play later or a touchdown later to Robert Woods, he's on Robert Woods. And on the, there's the one to Robert Woods. On the one to Kupp, they did some motion before pre-snap and then motion after the snap that got the Vikings crossed up. And on the one to Robert Woods, the Vikings just kind of had to pick their poison. They wanted to stay in their base defense because if you go to nickel, they're afraid Gurley's going to kill them. So that's where the personnel gives them advantage. So they left one fewer DB out there, another linebacker out there, and the Rams diagnosed it and took advantage.
I think it's a great point that Nick picks up. Sean McVay and Jared Goff, they had targeted Anthony Barr as a linebacker. Now, he's a former UCLA kid coming back to Los Angeles playing there, but they had targeted him for not a happy homecoming. Got him isolated in one-on-one matchups. Todd Gurley early, Kupp later on, and then we saw Woods with the seam route. So their game planning and being in sync, that offensive coordinator, head coach with their quarterback, you could see it paying dividends.
We didn't have many questions about what this Rams offense was going to be like last night. We did have a few questions about their defense. We thought both their corners would be out. Marcus Peters ended up being available and starting. But what did you see from them on defense? It wasn't a total blowout, but that was really where the strength of this team was when we first came into the season. We thought it was.
Listen, I on the defensive side of the ball, I want to give number, is it number eight? What number is Kirk Cousins wearing? Number eight for the Vikings. A lot of credit.
Yes.
I thought he played excellent because they do have a good defense, and this was a game that they paid Kirk Cousins for. I know he had the fumble at the end. I thought Kirk Cousins played an outstanding game and made some very difficult throws against, to your point, a formidable defense. The Rams were just overpowering.
Yeah. Marcus Peters playing was a huge for them. I told Nick this morning he wasn't supposed to play. Now, being young, you injure a calf. That was able to get him on a Thursday night. That was a great effort by him. Not his best game, but just being out there because we know we had Talib was going to be out on the other side. So what we had talked about the Rams was potentially the lack of a pass rush outside. Aaron Donald was phenomenal and dominated the middle of the football field later in the game. But you could see Wade Phillips, Jenna, to answer your questions, he put a little wrinkles in it. He put Ndamukong Suh in some passing situations outside, which gave them some more pressure, gave him a sack. And we haven't seen Ndamukong Suh play outside. Brockers play inside, a lot like Philadelphia did with Graham in the Super Bowl to get the sack there on Brady. So they're trying to be creative to be able to get some pressure outside. But their secondary, you have to give them some credit. Minnesota was effective. Yeah. But they in the end, when they were able to be able to stop them, you got to give that back end a lot of credit for that.
So, Nick, did the Rams cement themselves now as the best team in the NFL?
Oh, they're the best team in the league. And it right now doesn't seem incredibly close. They did something last night. I haven't been able to look it up or Dusty helped me out and look it up yet. But I would bet it hasn't happened in the league in 20 years. They had 550 yards of offense with one third down conversion. Think about that. They had 550 yards of offense. They only converted one third down. How do you do that? You're picking up your first and second down. Your CFL football, like you've talked about. We ain't even got to get to third down because we are moving the football. This offense is so deadly. It's got right now a perfect combination of a running back who terrifies you, a coach who is creative and smart, and a quarterback, to your point, to bring it full circle, that can right now do a little bit of everything to go along with, to your point, a very good defense. Mike Zimmer said it's the worst pass defense he's been a part of in his coaching career. And that's what the Vikings need to tighten up, but a lot of that's what the guys in blue and gold were doing.
Yeah, you have to give them credit. That's a good football team out there. And the Vikings did play better. They did respond to the awful loss, not the type of start that you want in your first quarter of the season. They got 10 days until they face Philadelphia, but they start 1-2-1. That's not what you expected from a team that went to the NFC Championship last season.
All right, let's take a break. On the other side, we'll talk about another team that's been a little unexpected of late. Is the AFC East on the line Sunday in Foxborough for the Patriots? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back. Tomorrow, it is a college football doubleheader on Fox, starting in the Big Ten with number 14 Michigan taking on Northwestern. Then number 11 Washington hosts 20th-ranked BYU. It all kicks off tomorrow at 4 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. All right, speaking of college football, Fox Sports has teamed up with For the Win for the College Football Fan Index. Each week, you, the fans, will be ranking college football experiences. This week, we're ranking the best marching bands. Vote on Twitter or Instagram with the hashtag FanIndex plus the hashtag for your school. Learn more at collegefootballfanindex.com. The results are in, and drum roll, the Central Michigan Chippewas have taken the top spot so far.
And, man, credit to the students and fans of Central Michigan because they stuffed the ballot box on this one. I mean, now, I wouldn't have voted for Ohio State C purely because they haven't let you dot the I yet, and until then, that marching band is dead to me. I think they let Jack Nicklaus do it twice. Give me a break. One of those times you could have done it. But, I mean, there's our...
Yeah, Jack could probably do it four times.
I've never seen the UMass marching band, but they must be outstanding.
Word on the street is they are very good.
I filed a vote for Southern, but didn't crack the top five. So Ohio Bobcats up there.
I can't even say anything because they have a university in Ohio. That's Ohio University. So all those people on the marching band are all the people we cut from the best damn band, Ohio State. And then they happen to have two other people in the Big Ten that the students, they not going to class. They just out there voting for their band. Purdue, because they got some of the largest drum or something.
He said that in my ear. Justin said that. I go, it can't be drum.
Yeah,
he must have the wrong large, one.
Yeah, that's
drum?
What they're, yeah. Because it's not their football team, but...
CeCe takes the marching bands very seriously.
Give me a C. We'll dap that. All right, we're going to get to Tom Brady in just a bit, but first, a couple of highlights. Watch this. Junior high football, Harlan Cyclones playing the Glenwood Rams.
What is up with
nice
these junior high schoolers?
Effort to make a one-handed catch. Just catch it with one hand.
Okay. Harlan, Iowa. I thought that was Harlem, Iowa. I said, okay. Now you went from one extreme to the other.
Harlem, Iowa.
But does it look like
Paris, Missouri wants a piece of that.
I got a lot of respect for middle school football. We've had several videos this week. Man, these kids are catching the ball.
Mm-hmm. All right, Thursday Night Football. Welcome to the Jared Goff Show. And this one finds a flying Brandon Cooks down the middle of the field.
This was really interesting because Xavier Rhodes had been taken off the field the previous play. Yep. They immediately went after
him. Yeah, out there acting like a kid, like Nick, having a tantrum, kicking the flag and everything. Zim did the right thing, put him right over there on the bench. And Trey Wayans, their other cornerback, first-round pick, he ended up getting hurt. He ended up being in the concussion protocol after this play.
All right, more from Goff. Rolls out, drops a dime to Cup for the touchdown. Nice throw right there.
Stop watching golf?
No. Look at golf. Oh, okay. Look at golf.
Oh, okay. All right.
Not that he's streaming the Ryder Cup right now as we do highlights.
Literally
he'd
right
never
next
do
to
that.
His scripts. Crazy.
I mean, this was great coverage, man, and just a better pass.
It really was. He's the third guy on this. It lets you know where golf is as a quarterback. Puts it only where his guy can get it. Two other guys, the number one covered, number two covered. He gets to the number three and finds him in the back of the end zone.
All right, moving on now to the Patriots. Unfamiliar territory for the team of late, trailing in their division. But, Jenna, they've won the AFC East 14 of the last 15 years. Yeah, but the Dolphins are quietly making a run, 3-0 heading into Foxborough Sunday. with a good group of players no one's really talking about. The Patriots, on the other hand, coming off back-to-back losses. Here's Dolphins quarterback Ryan Tannehill.
Well, I think that's something they've done a good job of. You know, we've had our opportunities up there. We've had put halves of football together up there, but haven't played a full game. So that's going to be big emphasis for us this week is to go up and play a full four quarters.
All right, before we get to the Dolphins, let's start with what the Patriots are going to have to do to bounce back. And it's odd to say bounce back against the Dolphins, but this is a good Dolphins team they're going up against.
All right, so each side of the ball, I'm going to give one key. Someone other than Rob Gronkowski is going to have to shift coverage a little bit. Someone's going to have to make a play to where the defensive game plan for the entire four quarters cannot just be double Gronkowski because we're not afraid of anybody else. I don't know if Josh Gordon's going to be active. If he is active, I wouldn't anticipate him being able to make a major impact immediately. So we're talking James White. We're talking maybe the Cordarrelle Patterson game that we thought could be coming from what he was doing in the preseason but has not really appeared in the regular season. Something on that front has to occur. And then defensively, man, the Pats, I would imagine, are going to have to play a lot of zone and try to keep guys in front of them because they do not have the speed to keep up with the Dolphins. Got five guys that are 4-4 or faster. The Pats, aside from Gilmore, I don't know if they have a single guy on their defense that I would say has elite speed for his position. So that's going to be their toughest part of this is making sure the Dolphins are not running away from them down the field.
I think it was 10 years ago where the Dolphins broke out the Wildcat. With Ronnie Brown.
Yep.
All right. And in talking with Adam Case the first week of the season, also, you know, Nick, I'm a kind of guy, once I meet you and everything, good little relationship. I like to exchange numbers, open up communication. So in communicating with him and moving forward, because I thought they would be much improved. I thought they would be part of the conversation. So I'm like, Coach, tell me who your team is. And he explained how much speed they have. He believes that Ryan Tannehill is a lot better quarterback, a lot like the 2016 quarterback, believing that he would come into all that would crystallize this season. But he's really excited about their running backs. People talk about Kenyon Drake. You know, he had an outstanding season, especially finished last season very, very strong. In the last game against New England, Kenyon Drake had 193 yards from scrimmage. So Adam Case, he knows how to attack that defense as far as those linebackers and lack of speed. But what he believes is the difference on this team is Frank Gore. It's not something that Miami has had. A constant thumper. They took care of Frank all during the training camp. Adam Case and Frank Gore almost came to blows because Frank's like, Coach, I need to be practicing. I want to play more. And he's like, no, I got a plan for you. And that's during the regular season. So Frank go out and run with the strength coach and come back when the full sweat. And coach said, I thought I gave you the day off. Frank said, I can't take the day off. So that relationship, Frank coming back to Miami to give them that thump, their offensive line for the Dolphins is really underrated. So I'm going to put that on the offensive line and their ability to get their running backs, make them to be productive, Nick.
And listen, Frank Gore is the only player on the Dolphins who's won in this building, who's won at Gillette. And he did it not as a Dolphin. He did it as a San Francisco 49er. And that's not to make the point that he brings some knowledge, but it's to the point that nobody in the AFC East goes to New England and wins. The Patriots, with Tom Brady at the quarterback since 2007, they're 27-1 at home against the AFC East. And the one loss was a Week 17 game that Brady didn't play the second half. So in games that Brady actually plays from 07 to now, they're 27-0. So
Deuce.
I say that to say this. If the Pats lose this weekend, it is officially panic time. It is not the typical slow start. It is not, oh, wait till November. It is uncharted waters. Three straight losses would be first since 02. 1-3 for worst start in almost 20 years for them. And to lose a divisional home game that matters, something they haven't done since but prior to the undefeated season, like, it would be official panic time in New England if they lose this weekend.
It doesn't strike me that Adam Gase cares about numbers or records. He even said, because it can't matter to us. They only have one guy who's got experience there. They can't bring that into it. It's got to be, here's what we've done. No one's watching us. We're 3-0. We've got a lot of power on offense. But then I ask, are the Dolphins just the more talented team in this matchup? Man to man, obviously, besides quarterback.
That's a brain teaser there, Jenna. The Dolphins do have a lot of talent. And they've really been dysfunctional as far as their locker room. So a lot of the focus hadn't been on the talent in Miami. It's been on other things. They are a talented team. Tom Brady. I mean, there's going to be a lot of teams more talented than New England. Okay, so Miami does have more talent. And when you get to the skill position, you're talking about a drastic difference. Watch for Adam Case bringing back the anniversary of the Wildcat. Watch Albert Wilson in the Wildcat. Watch how many different versions. Watch the Wildcat pop up on Sunday at 1 o'clock in Gillette.
And while some people watching might be like, you guys are overhyping the Dolphins a bit. I don't know if they're more talented than New England. Here's what I do know. They are more athletic. They absolutely, yeah. if we took this to a track, if we did any type of competition that involved speed, agility, leaping, the Miami Dolphins would lap the New England Patriots. Now, the Pats might have some better big people. They might, Mangini put it great. He, as far as they want to get into a fight instead of a race, like they want to punch instead of dance. That's what the Pats have always tried to do. But this is an interesting matchup. And it's a matchup where if the moment's not too big for the players on the Miami Dolphins, if they're not thinking about we can put a strangle on the division, I think they got a good chance. And what they do have going for them is a quarterback who's got to be playing with the most confidence of his career. They're 10-1 in their last 11 starts by Ryan Tannehill. People don't believe that because they forget he missed all of last year. He actually missed the tail end of 2016, but he was 7-1 over an 8-week stretch before he got hurt in 2016.
And,
they're 3-0 now.
Yeah, they made a lot of adjustments in Miami. They are very, very athletic. And can they make New England play the type of game in space that they want them to play? On the defensive side, one little quick note. Watch Kiko Alonso. He's got two younger linebackers playing with him, two Buckeyes playing with him. Watch him because he's a three-down linebacker. Underrated what his ability is. He hasn't been part of the national scene, but he is kind of the guts of that defense there.
Let me ask you real quick. Do you think Josh Gordon is active this week?
No. I'm going with next week. Him and Edelman both come back together and they score 50.
Okay.
Awesome. All right, time now for Nick's Fantasy Update sponsored by DraftKings. All right, Nick, today we're going to focus on tight ends. I want one stud and one value pick.
Stud, I'm going with Travis Kelce. He is not going to be double-teamed all game the way Gronk is. He's expensive, $6,800 DraftKings dollars. Mm-hmm. They're playing in Denver, but I like Travis Kelce this weekend as my DraftKings stud tight end.
Especially lined up against their strong safeties. Are their linebackers nice mismatch?
It's a big Monday Night Football game, by the way, if you want to check that out. And then my value pick, David Njoku, the tight end for the Cleveland Browns. Only $3,200. They're up against a terrible Raiders pass defense. I like David Njoku, young quarterback, usually likes to go to the tight end. And so I see he and Baker Mayfield pairing up for one touchdown this weekend.
Also, if you go back to Baker Mayfield's Oklahoma days, he had a nice little rapport with the tight ends there. They, you know, they weren't just the kind of offense that threw it sideways. He liked finding that tight end, so good choice there.
All right, DraftKings has paid out over $75 million through 3 weeks of the NFL season, and this week you can play for free for your share of the next $1 million in prizes. All you have to do is sign up, draft a lineup, and enter the Play Action Contest. Don't forget to use promo code FS1. Want to learn how to play for free? We've got you covered. Back here, first things first, and we are talking the Carolina Panthers, who are currently on their bye week, coming off a 31-21 win over the Cincinnati Bengals. So the 2-1 Panthers now sit tied atop a very jam-packed division in the NFC South. And we are joined by a prominent member of that team, Panthers three-time Pro Bowl tight end Greg Olsen, live from Carolina. First of all, Greg, thanks so much for getting up and being with us this morning.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
So, Greg, now your team sits. They get their second win of the season somehow, some way, without your services. You've been recovering from that broken foot. First of all, tell us how that recovery is coming along.
You know, it's coming along well. It's obviously been frustrating now for the second year in a row to have the same injury kind of creep back up after you think it's long in your past. You know, I went all offseason, OTAs and minicamp, training camp, and had no issues. And you get to the first quarter of the first game and, you know, you just step funny and make a bad cut and you kind of have a setback. So it's something we think we can work through. It's something that, you know, is maybe a matter of more of weeks than it is months, we're hoping. And, you know, just trying to do everything I can to get back out there. For the second year in a row, this is kind of uncharted waters for me.
I was watching the game when it happened. I saw the frustration on your face. I don't want to call it heartbreak, but it seemed like there was a "you got to be kidding me" moment for you after dealing with it last year. How is the rehab process different this year, and how long did it take for you to mentally kind of get over this again before jumping into it?
Yeah, it was funny. It was the last play of the first quarter, and I kind of felt something when I ran a route, and I was coming back to the huddle. We did, you know, we broke for the quarter, and we walked down the other side, and I was walking. I said to one of the guys, I said, "Man, I might have just re-broke my foot." And he was like, "What are you talking about?" I was like, "I don't know." I tried to kind of run in place, and I knew, sure enough. And, you know, fortunately, last year I had the surgery, so I have the screw already in that bone. So there is some healing already and some stability to the inside of that bone that refractured. So not having to have the surgery again, you know, definitely puts me ahead of my timeline from last year. How far ahead is still something we're kind of working through. There's not a whole lot of examples of kind of foregoing the surgery route. So we're confident. Our foot doctor and our training staff is very confident we're going to be able to get through it. It's just a matter of when I'll be ready, and once I get out there, trying to stay on the field and play the rest of the season. So it's there's never a dull moment in the NFL, that's for sure.
Greg, it's always been one of my pleasures covering you. You know, I've talked to you a number of times through the years, you know, in Chicago and there in Carolina. You're one of the great leaders there in Carolina, off the field, Walter Payton recipient. And you and your family have made an impact there. Yesterday, the Carolina Panthers are in the news. A guy you're familiar with, a guy you've played several games with, against, and also the playoffs when he was in San Francisco. What do you make of your organization signing Eric Reed as a safety to join your team?
Yeah, as you said, you know, even back all the way back to 2013, you know, we've played Eric in playoff games, we've played him in regular season games, and he was always a guy on the field and football-wise, that was a guy you accounted for. He was a guy you noticed, his presence, his physicality, what he was able to bring. And, you know, obviously we all know what's transpired over the last few years and what's gone on with, you know, with him specifically. But it was nice. Yesterday I was at the facility doing my rehab, and he was in for his physical, so I got to meet him really for the first time personally and just kind of welcome him to the team and try to give him a little bit of an idea of you know, what our team is about and kind of how we operate, what a great group of guys he's joining and what a great locker room we're joining. And I think we're all excited to get to know him. I know a lot has been made about what's gone on when, you know, out in San Francisco with Colin and the whole thing, but, you know, I know from a football standpoint, I think everyone obviously it's without a doubt, we know he can help our team. And then from the personal standpoint, you know, listen, this is a very complicated issue. There's a lot of people that have very strong feelings, you know, about this anthem policy, but just more on a larger level have, you know, the social policy. So we're excited to have him. We know he's a very intelligent person. Torrey Smith speaks very highly of him, who's a guy I have a lot of respect for, who has a very clear mind and is a very thoughtful person. So Torrey, you know, vouching for him obviously goes a long way, and everyone you've talked to says nothing but good things about him as a person, and I think he's going to fit in our locker room really well.
Greg, as has been the case the last few years, this team seems to go as Cam Newton goes. At least that's what the narrative is as we start previewing this season, just because he tends to have, you know, somewhat up and down starts or middles to this season. How have you seen Cam Newton develop over the 8 seasons that you've spent playing with him? And where is his mindset? How is he looking coming into this year?
Yeah, I think he's gotten off to a really good start. You know, even our one loss now down in Atlanta in week 2, I thought he played really well. He was really efficient with the ball, kind of taking what they gave him. You know, they played real soft. I know we didn't have a lot of our deep shots like we're accustomed to, but, you know, we were real productive underneath. We had a chance to have the ball there in the fourth quarter to go in and tie the game up. We came up short. But I think he's gotten off to as good a start as he has, and I think that's saying a lot. You know, we've seen him play, you know, football, you know, arguably at the highest level for anyone who's been a true dual threat quarterback. You know, he's not just a guy who's going to run around and make plays with his feet. You know, he's going to stand in there, as we've seen now for 8 years, and deliver the ball from the pocket on time, you know, in a very complex downfield passing route that, you know, passing offense that Norv has installed this year. So I think a lot of time he doesn't get the credit he deserves for what the impact he makes on the game, and I think that's unfortunate. But this year specifically, I think his first 3 games has been really good. I think guys around him are playing well, and I think he's a big part of that.
You touched on something that I wanted to ask you about, which is the impact almost emotionally the team seems to get from him. When you look at Cam's raw passing numbers, he gets criticized a lot. But that doesn't include his rushing additions to the team. And I watch the Panthers closely. The juice you guys seem to get from him when he's going well. Can you explain almost his value from that side of it, from the intangible leadership and the tangible what he does as a runner?
Yeah, we've always said if he played linebacker or safety or wide receiver and the energy he played with and the charisma and the brashness, I think people would applaud him. But just because he plays quarterback, people aren't really accustomed to that. They're used to seeing their quarterback be very cool and calm and collected and kind of keep a – and that's just not Cam's style. And, you brought up the statistics and passing touchdowns and yardage and whatnot, but – you're exactly right. I mean, it's very convenient when people want to talk about Cam and the other elite quarterbacks in the league to leave out that he's rushed for more touchdowns than any player in the league since he's come in, more than any quarterback in the history of the game. His third down scrambles, that's just as good as a third down completion. He's converting first downs, he's moving the chains. So it's unconventional. We're not used to seeing it. It's not the traditional quarterback play we've seen across the league for a long time. But you can't argue that his impact on our team specifically and the impact that he's had in this league, what he's done in his first 8 years, you could say there's no one who's been able to do it in that manner.
Greg, I need your help. I know All that right. You'll have a strong opinion on this. Based on me seeing you a bunch of times and your wife's influence, you're one of the best dressers in the NFL. Myself, I care about my haberdasher also. Cam Newton, can you explain his style to us? Please, help me out, because sometimes Cam gets me upset. You can't? Greg,
I don't
come
know
on
if anyone
now.
Can explain
you, you,
it.
You
I
go think... to college at University of Miami, and you weren't just there. You fit in, okay? Explain this to me, man. You're a world traveler. Explain it to me.
I'll tell you what, I've seen a lot. I've been around a lot of different people. I've been around a lot of different styles, been in a lot of different locker rooms. There's one Cam, and I don't know how else to really describe it. He's very sure of what his style is. He's very sure of the way he wants to show up to games. Obviously, his post-game press conferences have gotten a lot of attention over the years, but, that's just kind of his thing. That's what makes him tick. He enjoys it. It kind of fits him.
Kind of.
I don't really know what else to say about it.
All right, Greg, I want to...
I'll put it this way. I don't think I could have wore it. I don't think I could get away with wearing a designer bathrobe.
Oh, you should try it.
Can,
hey,
try the bathrobe.
Can you imagine?
Please, when you come back, the first game back, do what D-Jack did with Fitzpatrick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Switch post-game outfits.
Cam, if you have 400 yards.
Exactly right. Cam, you and Cam, about the same size. Cam, wear whatever you're wearing, which always looks good. And you try on Cam's... I'm sure he's got an ascot. There's probably some velour in there. You guys just switch it up.
Got it all. We go for 400 yards. That's a done deal.
Oh, okay. He said it. All right, awesome. If you help CC with his fashion, help me with my fantasy league. I picked Christian McCaffrey this year. I know Ron Rivera said he was going to touch the ball 890 times per game as the season progresses. That's why I grabbed him. How much has he evolved from year one to year two?
Yeah, I think the last 2 weeks kind of show you all you need to see. I think that's a good pick, first and foremost. You look in the Atlanta game, we don't have a ton of run game. We fall behind a little bit in the second half. We resort to throwing the ball quite a bit. And he's got, I think, like 14 catches. And then you flip it. The last week against Cincinnati became more of a run game because we got a lead that we were kind of sitting on in the second half. And he rushed the ball 26 times for 180 yards and only had two catches. So I think with a guy like Christian on any given game or a combination of the two, his total yardage, it's like we talked about with Cam. Everyone wanted to get on Christian last year for, rushing yards and rushing attempts and all that. But you got to take the whole picture. And with Christian, it's touches and it's total yards. In some games, it might be, more receiving, more rushing, or vice versa. But overall, his touches and his yards are the impact that he can make on our offense in both facets of the game. And it makes it very hard for defenses to account for him. It makes it very hard for defenses to defend him, and I think we've seen that through the first 3 weeks of the season, just the amount of versatility he brings our offense.
Greg, you guys play in the only division with three MVP quarterbacks. You're playing in a division where all three teams with those quarterbacks have been to the Super Bowl. I assume that makes the season harder, but I'm guessing there are some benefits to going through that type of gauntlet, assuming you do get to the postseason. What are some of the pluses and negatives of how brutal the NFC South can be?
Yeah, I mean, the reality of it is pretty much what you just said. This is a quarterback-driven league, and if you look around, you know, certain divisions that have been dominated for, you know, in some cases 10 plus years, typically they're very top heavy with quarterback play, and the other three or two teams tend to have a kind of rotating band there. And the reality is in our league for the last almost decade, at least three of the teams, and now you could argue all four teams, have, you know, high level elite quarterback play. And I think that, you know, six games a year, your division games are going to be tough. You're going to have three of them on the road that you're going to try to go and steal a few, and you got to hold your own at your own place. So it leaves those other 10 games for what they are, but you know you're going to have six of the 16 are going to be tough. They're going to be back and forth. They could be high scoring, they could be low scoring, and that's played out over the last couple years. And there's not a lot of divisions around the league that can say that on a year in, year out basis. But we happen to be in one of them. But to your other point, it prepares us. We've played in a lot of different styles. We've played in a lot of different, hostile environments. You go down on the road to New Orleans late in the season with the division on the line, or like last year we had to do in the playoffs, or you go to Atlanta with things on the line. I mean, those are hard places to play on the road in a dome. So I think that does prepare us for what's out there around the rest of the league. But, you know, if you're asking would we rather play in some other divisions, I think we'd be lying if we said no.
Greg, you've been a dominant tight end in the NFL for a long time. Yourself, Rob Gronkowski, there's some others out there. Tell me, who are the tight ends that you like? Kind of give me your top four or five tight ends who you feel are the best in the NFL right now.
Yeah, I mean, you name two of them there. You know, obviously, what Gronk's been able to do in his career up there in New England with Brady is pretty special. I know he's gotten off to a little bit of a slow start after week one this year, but you know, I think a lot of that is just, you know, a credit to him and just how much defense has really game plan him. I don't think, you know, offensively right now, New England is where they're typically used to being. So he's carrying a lot of that load right now until Edelman gets back and they get Josh Gordon up to speed. But as long as he has Brady, you know, as long as the team has Brady, he has Brady. Obviously, they got a shot. I think what they do with Kelce in Kansas City is pretty cool. I've watched a lot of what they do with him over the years since Andy Reid's joined them. With Tyreek Hill and Hunt at running back, and then Kelce, what he can do, and now they add Sammy Watkins. I mean, they got a lot of weapons. So, complete opposite of Gronk. You know, if you're going into a game to take Kelce away, you got your hands full about three or four other guys. So I think teams tend to, you know, play them a little bit more honest, and I don't think anybody's kind of solved that riddle, at least through the first three games this year. Before he retired, a guy, I know he doesn't play anymore, but a guy that I always mentioned, he was my high school, my recruiting host when I went to the University of Tennessee as a high school senior, was Jason Witten. I always, not the flashiest guy, not a guy that was the highlight reel guy, but just a reliable guy, a consistent guy. Teammates loved him. People around the league had a lot of respect for him. He was a guy I always kind of emulated myself after. I wanted a team that, you know, the defensive coordinator comes up to you and tells you how much he appreciates you, but you're not the guy everyone's always talking about. You're not the guy, you know, dancing and making all the scenes. That was kind of always something I modeled myself after. So Jason had a big impact on me in that regard.
Greg, just so people don't think you chose groceries as your decorative background for the interview with us this morning, tell us why you are here this morning.
Yeah, so I've teamed up with Walgreens and P&G. I'm sure just like you guys and all the folks watching this, I have three young kids. Our household is chaotic and hectic and busy, and it takes a lot to run those houses. So with teaming up with them and they're for the month of October, they're running a campaign called the BOGO 50 Blitz. You can go get any certain participating P&G products at your local Walgreens, and you can get that same product 50% off. And through the month of October, just to be able to stock up on things that we all know we take for granted on a daily basis that it takes to run our household, provide for our children. It's a really cool campaign. I'm happy to work with them because I know what it's like. I see what my wife has to do on a daily basis, providing for three little crazy ones. And it's been a lot of fun, and it's been cool working with them.
All right, Greg, just to recap, if Cam Newton throws for over 400 yards, you will wear a bathrobe to the press conference. Did we agree on
whatever
that?
Whatever Cam was going to wear,
that's
he's
what you,
going
okay,
to wear.
Okay, we want to make sure we had that solidified.
Deal.
And it's out
it's on the record.
Okay,
it's on the record.
He's going to join his boy Jason Witten in the Monday night booth.
give him some help.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Craig.
We really appreciate it. Good luck with your healing the rest of the way. We got much more First Things First right after this.
Get healthy, buddy.
Back here, First Things First, we're joined by former Super Bowl champ Chris Caney.
Hey,
what's
Jenna.
Up, Chris?
Nothing much, Jenna. How are you doing this morning?
I am doing great. New York City, pouring rain, cloudy, but I am doing great. What?
Don't tell the people the weather. Let's go. unless it's good. Sunny here in New York.
Sunny here in New York. It's a beautiful day.
Work good conditions are amazing.
Game Sunday with the Saints and Giants. Saints offense led by Drew Brees at 39 years old. He hasn't slowed down one bit, leading the Saints to the third most points per game. So what's the problem? Well, his defense has given up the most points in the league per game. Ooh. Needless to say, Saints will have their hands full with Odell Beckham Jr. on Sunday. OBJ, though, has yet to score a touchdown this season. He knows he's got some work to do.
There's still been times where, you know, you're coming back and I'm used to everything, but it's like you're scared to hit. You're scared to just hit it like you used to. And I seen one opportunity that I missed and I was upset about it. It was a slant and it cleared out for me. It was perfect. And I kind of slowed down and just hesitated a little bit for a second. And that could have been the difference. That's the ones that go 60 or 70. So I was a little upset by that. I'm definitely not content. I feel like I could always do more. And that's always going to be my mentality. I can go for 500 yards and I'll still look back at that one pass that you didn't get. And it's like, wow, I could have went for 560 and a touchdown. You know what I mean? That's just how my mind is. That's just how I'm built. That's how I'm wired.
So, Chris, I understand he, like other players, want to get better. But did that surprise you a little bit, that two games in, he's still maybe like a step or two hesitant, doesn't feel 100% comfortable and confident yet?
No, it doesn't surprise me because he only played in a handful of games last year, and you saw that he got injured early on. So you expected that coming back, there would be a little bit of that hesitancy. He didn't play in the preseason. So being in NFL, you have to adjust to game speed. There's one thing to practice, but then once you get out there in actual games, especially meaningful games in a regular season, it's an uptick in tempo. So I think Odell's adjusting to that. But in terms of his production, I think he's been outstanding. I mean, you look at it, he's got 24 catches on 35 targets and 271 yards, which is 12th in the NFL at wide receiver position. So it's not like Odell isn't producing. I just look at this offense and I say, Eli Manning hasn't had the time to get Odell Beckham Jr. the ball downfield. You look at some of the opportunities that they missed in the Texans game. Mm-hmm. You look at some of the opportunities that they missed in the first two games, particularly in that Jacksonville Jaguars game. You saw that the offensive line was so bad that Eli Manning didn't have time to go through the progression and actually deliver the football to Odell downfield. Out of all the quarterbacks in the NFL, Eli Manning has the most sacks with less than 2.5 seconds in the pocket.
So then tell me how this, that's Chris. How
that's
this,
unbelievable.
That's unbelievable. So how does this offense take advantage of this Saints defense that obviously hasn't done much this year?
Well, I think you have to take a page out of what Pat Shurmur's formula was in that Texans game last week. They had the most rush attempts out of any game they played in last week. And part of that is playing with the lead because they scored on all four of their offensive possessions in the first half. But also, I think it's that guard, center, guard trio with John Greco, Patrick Omame, and Will Hernandez. Those guys doing a lot better on the combination blocks, being able to chip off of the down lineman, climb to the second level. That's when you get more consistency in the run game. That's why we saw Saquon Barkley, the 4, 5, 6 yard gains. Rather than just hitting a home run, being able to consistently get production in the run game takes a lot of pressure off of the passing game. And you saw opportunities open up in that Texans game, and Eli Manning was able to take advantage of it.
Well, the game I had last week, New Orleans, overtime, 43-37 over Atlanta. Since 2016, New Orleans has scored 40 points 8 times. So whatever OBJ and Eli, whatever, they better get it worked out because New Orleans can score the football. They attack you in a variety of different ways. This is the last game that Ingram is serving his suspension. So, you know, Kamara is handling the ball out of the backfield. I mean, in the backfield and catching the ball plenty out of the backfield. So they are going to have a heavy workload because they know that they're getting Ingram back next week. Drew Brees, I believe, I've seen him play a lot of good football, but this is the best that I've seen him play. his ability to be able to get the ball into tight spots, to get the ball out of his hand, to avoid the blitzes, to avoid sacks as a quarterback. He's playing at an all-time level. And I believe they're going to put a lot of stress on this defense. So when you talk about OBJ, the one thing you have to be careful when you're a number one receiver and you see a team that's given up a lot of yards, don't calculate in your head, oh, man, I'm going to have 8 for 150 against them, because those are the games when you think that way, you have a hard time because you have too high expectations. Go out there and act like you're facing a Dallas defense, a Texans defense, or a Jacksonville defense. That's the way he should do it. A lot of times if you don't have that same intensity in preparing, you say, man, this defense, and this defense ends up playing better. So that's one thing that I would watch with OBJ, that as it, when you're a dominant receiver and you're going against a defense, that you see the film, be like, man, they're not very good. You have to trick yourself in the game into thinking this team will play their best game of the season.
All right, you guys have talked about everything around this game except for really focusing on one guy, and that's the guy I'm going to be focused on this week, and that's number 10. Because you mentioned that Drew Brees is having the best start to any season of his career, and every quarterback they're facing, that Saints defense is turning into a better version of Drew Brees. Mm-hmm. Drew Brees, a 120 rating this year. The quarterback's going against the Saints, a 140 rating this year. 11 yards per pass attempt, not completion, attempt against this Saints defense. I understand the offensive line is not good. I need to see Eli Manning have a big football game. I thought Eli Manning played well in the game against Houston. I thought it was clearly his best game of the year. His worst game of the year was the first one. He's gotten better each week. I'm not saying the Giants have to go win this game. New Orleans is a good team. But this would be a hell of a time to break that 2.5 year haven't scored 30 points streak.
Yep.
Like, this would be a great time to actually show a pulse on offense legitimately. Last week, 27 points, that's a pulse, so I should be fair there. But this is a game where everyone has taken advantage of the Saints defense. Eli should be able to as well, offensive line woes notwithstanding.
Yeah, I think you saw it trending that way against the Texans game. I mean, just the command that he had of that offense and then being able to throw the ball downfield. I mean, the one throw that he had early in the second quarter to OBJ on that seven cut, that's a special throw in between coverage. There are only a few quarterbacks in our league that can consistently make that play happen. But that's what Eli Manning is when he gets the time. You saw when the Texans had that late touchdown drive, Eli Manning led a drive of his own, and he went 6 for 6 for 76 yards in that touchdown
right
to
back.
Sterling Shepard. He answered right back. That's what this team needs Eli Manning to be able to do. The only problem that I've had is that with the juggling of this offensive line, this group hasn't had the continuity, and so they haven't been consistent. But I think Pat Shurmur helped those guys by being able to commit to the run game. Because guess what? Those offensive linemen, they're a lot better going forward than they are going backward in pass protection.
Speaking of the run game, you brought up Alvin Kamara and what he's had to do and been able to do with Ingram out, being used both to run and in the pass catching mode. But is that sort of the way the Giants and Pat Shurmur want to use Saquon Barkley? Would they be able to use him in sort of a similar fashion?
That's what you want to see. And, I mean, Sean Payton is the mad scientist. Like, he will throw the ball to the running back, and if you don't cover him, like, he will continue to throw to him. But in a perfect world, that's the type of mix that you want. Because also, receiving out of the backfield is not going to put a lot of wear and tear on Barkley as a young player. I would just be careful. Even at Penn State, if there was one question mark about him, you don't see him with 25 carries at Penn State. You don't see him at the end of the game have 8 straight carries. So once you get into pro football, is he capable of that type of workload? If there is a weakness, it's just because we just have not seen
it yet. Yeah. All right, let's take a break. Stick around, Kenny, coming up. Did Jared Goff and the Rams solidify themselves as the best team in the National Football League? Next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, Chris Caney still with us. If there were any questions about Jared Goff last night, there are none this morning. Vikings and Rams, the Rams quarterback finished with career highs of 465 yards and 5 touchdowns, oh, and 0 interceptions. The first Rams quarterback with 5 TDs since Kurt Warner did it back in 1999. Goff finished with a perfect passer rating last night. So the Vikings are now 1-2-1 with the loss. Rams are 4-0 with the win. That for the first time in 17 years.
We were kind of getting everything we wanted in the run and the pass. And just the way the game was going, I think we knew with the way their offense was moving the ball, we had to score a lot of points. And sometimes that's the way it goes. But, you know, either way, we put up points. Sometimes, you know, we go down there and Todd scores a bunch of touchdowns, and sometimes we throw them. So it's just the way our offense is.
At the end of the day, I think he's just throwing the ball extremely well. You know, he's able to, you know, when things are in rhythm, he's been outstanding, giving guys a chance to run after the catch. And then you look at a couple of the plays where we ended up running some bootlegs, and he's going to his left, getting his shoulders around, hitting Cooks in stride, hitting Robert Woods. So there's a handful of plays that he made tonight that are just a great player making great plays. But then also when things were there in rhythm, I thought he was outstanding.
All right, Chris Kenny, what did you take out as the key in this game on how the Rams were able to dominate?
Well, I think it was Jared Goff's ability just to distribute the football. He took what the defense gave him, and he made some really accurate throws. But the throw that probably impressed me the most was the touchdown pass to Brandon Cooks, because the criticism on Jared Goff was they didn't know whether or not he had the arm talent that goes along with being the number one overall pick. But I think that you saw that, being able to put that ball right there for Brandon Cooks with Trey Waynes in tight coverage. That's a special throw. Also, the one that he had in the high red zone when he's moving to his right and he drops it in the bucket to Cooper Kupp, that's another special throw. So, I mean, I think that you saw some really high-level quarterbacking in that game. And you have to tip your cap to Kirk Cousins. I thought he did a good job in that game as well. He gave his team a chance, although end of half, end of game leaves something to be desired with Kirk Cousins. Wasn't sure why they weren't able to clock it at the end of that first half
that
get a shot into the end zone. But that's another story for another day. I think the headline for today has to be Jared Goff and what he was able to do, especially getting out to that kind of start. 250 yards passing and 4 touchdowns in the first half.
Yeah,
that gives your team a pretty good chance to win.
Well, you mentioned he had a perfect passer rating. We see those games a few times a year, a guy with a 158.3 rating. No one in NFL history has ever had a perfect passer rating throwing as many passes as Goff did last night. So, like, that it was to have a perfect passer rating on that high volume of throws, 33 attempts, we've never seen it before. We've never seen a player in Rams history, and Kurt Warner played for them, have 5 touchdowns and 0 picks. And so, yes, he is elevating himself back to the place that people thought he was when he went number one overall, when the Rams traded up to get the number one overall pick in order to be able to draft him. With all that said, he has a perfect situation. We talked about Patty Mahomes in Kansas City and all the weapons. This is the NFC version of that. Andy Reid, meet Sean McVay. And the different things they're doing, because everyone on Twitter is killing Anthony Barr, right? And I said to myself, this can't be Anthony Barr's fault. Like, that there's no way the design is Anthony Barr guard Cooper Kupp, Anthony Barr guard Robert Woods. And on the Cooper Kupp touchdown, it was pre-play motion that got Anthony Barr crossed up on him, or the nickel corner crossed up, so Anthony Barr had no choice. And on the Robert Woods touchdown, it was pick your poison. Do you want to go to nickel, and they can audible to a run, and they can just run Todd Gurley right at you? Or do you want to leave your base defense out there and have Anthony Barr on your number three wide receiver? Both of them resulted in touchdowns. That's schematics. That's pre-snap stuff to go along with Jared Goff being great at the snap.
Yeah, there shouldn't be one conversation potentially for the rest of his career, is Jared Goff a game manager? Now, does he take advantage of the talent? Does he take advantage of the play calling? Yes, but the reason why the talent is highlighted and the play calling the way it is because the coach believes in the quarterback. He made some outstanding throws. You talking about no interceptions. There wasn't a chance for a Viking guy to get a hand on the ball, let alone build an intercept one. So he made a number of throws that were very, very impressive. The way he took velocity off on Kupp's touchdown, scrambling to his right on the naked bootleg, Kupp over top of the two defenders, that was his third read. His ability to make the safety go to the right, Robert Woods up the slot seam, and his ability to be able to flight the ball, because you could hear him and Brandon Cooks, they were mic'd up on the sideline. He told him, I had to flight it a little lower. It's like a golf shot into the wind, because earlier in the season, they ran the same route, and he floated the ball, and the ball was tapped away for incompletion. This one, you could see, he hit him. That ball caught the receiver. Yeah. He put that ball right on his shoulder pad against tight coverage. So we have to be able to give Goff a lot of credit, because no quarterback among all these good quarterbacks we've seen them grow from as bad as he was as a rookie to where he is presently.
So if you're giving that credit to Goff, did you not have any issues with what the Vikings defense presented last night?
Well, I thought that was more Sean McVay and the innovations that he has on the offensive side of the ball, doing things to challenge the eye discipline of those guys on the second and third levels of the defense, but also being able to scheme it formation-wise to get the matchups that you're looking for. You were talking about Anthony Barr and how they isolated him in coverage. Anthony Barr is one of those outside linebackers that he's probably better when he's hunting the quarterback than he is going after those receivers in coverage. So I think that Sean McVay did a very good job of being able to scheme it up that way. But then that's why you also have to credit the quarterback. We make a lot about the physical talents of players, but quarterbacking has more to do with the neck up and being able to understand the offense and having a grasp of it. And Sean McVay talked about Jared Goff taking ownership in the game plan during the course of the week, making sure that the concepts that are in there are concepts that he's comfortable with. And you saw that last night on display. So when you get your quarterback to graduate to that level, that's when you know you got something special. And it's clear to me that the Los Angeles Rams have a special talent in Jared Goff.
I'll tell you who was making it about the Vikings defense, Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer, who said after the game it was as poor a pass defense as he's ever been associated with. Yes. This guy was a D coordinator for 15 years. Every year they've been in Minnesota, they've been excellent defensively. They have to clean that up. The Rams are a tough team to clean it up against. But on the golf point, he is going to change the way any of us who do this for a living, who are quick to call someone a bust, how much time we give guys. Mm. Goff's rookie year, he was spectacularly bad. He was 0-7. In those seven games, he threw five total touchdowns. Five total. He completed half his passes at 5 yards per attempt. Since his rookie year, it's not only that they're 15-4, 39-9 touchdown interception ratio, a 106 rating, like elite numbers that flipped this quickly. Now, Gurley got better when McVay got there. The whole scheme got better when McVay got there. But Goff deserves a ton of credit for not having that rookie year break him.
Yeah, and spreading the credit around, because when you're playing well, that's what happens. Organization, they're doing the right thing. The head coach is outstanding, one of the great young coaches that we have. They won't. It's not sexy. That offensive line, though, has improved so much through the years. They got Whitworth at the left tackle to stabilize that offensive line. They got two guys. Their center is 33, and I think Whitworth's 35. Like, yep. So they got some seasoned guys on that offensive line that people don't talk about, but that allows them, because they like to get five out into the pattern. They like to get the back, tight end, three receivers, all out. So the responsibility is on that offensive line.
Center left. Roger Saffold was their pick in 2010. I mean, we're in 2018, so their center you mentioned is in mid-30s. Saffold's in his early 30s. And Andrew Whitworth, who was a late bloomer as a pro, made an all-pro team his last year in Cincinnati, I believe, them deciding last offseason, we're going to buy into Jared Goff, even though we're trading away Brandon Cooks. Mm. We're going to buy into Jared Goff, and we are going to stabilize his left side of the offensive line. That was one of the biggest offseason acquisitions last year. It's still paying dividends.
Chris, are the Rams now officially the best team, in your opinion, in the NFL?
Well, you are what your record says you are, and the Rams are 4-0. So they're the only team that's 4-0 right now. So, yeah, they're one of the best teams, if not the best team, in the NFL. But I will say this. We're at the quarter mark of the season. The Rams haven't left the state of California. So coming up, they got Seattle, Denver, and San Francisco all on the road. Four of their next five are on the road, because there's a visit to the Saints as well in there. So, I mean, this is a situation where it was set up for the Rams to have early season success. They took care of that business. Now they got to take the show on the road. We'll see how this team responds.
They're not back home till week eight against the Packers.
Well, according to Twitter, the Rams bandwagon is getting full, so hop on early. Chris, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show coming up. Hey, what is the key for Carson Wentz in his second start? Next up, First Things First. Welcome back on Sunday. It is a great slate of NFL action highlighted by Matthew Stafford and the Lions taking on Ezekiel Elliott and the Dallas Cowboys. Or Baker Mayfield and the Browns battling those Raiders. It is all on Fox and the Fox Sports app. You can check local listings for the game in your area.
You finally got a weekend you ain't traveling. You making the trek uptown, see? Little four-screen action? Come on.
No, bro. No
you
football
ain't
this weekend, man. No. I mean, I'm all on football, but my wife and I, we got appointments with each other.
Oh.
yeah, that's how that's going to happen.
Get to Carson Wentz in a second, but first.
Not middle school.
junior high football. This is the Harlan Cyclones playing the Glenwood Rams. Nice effort to make the one-handed catch.
Did you say the Harlem Cyclones?
I said Harlan.
Oh, I thought that might be Marcus Garvey Park. Look at that.
Big Vikings fans there in Iowa now. That's our state. They don't have no team.
Oh, they're Chiefs fans.
Thursday night football. Okay. Welcome to the Jared Goff Show.
Maybe you have Northern Iowa. Southern Iowa's Chiefs fans, see? Goff. Big in Omaha.
Maybe this year's Chiefs, but y'all ain't won none.
Words.
Sorry, John.
Other words. This Goff found Cooks. Do your thing, Nick.
Xavier Rhodes got benched on this play because he kicked a flag. I'd have maybe let him stay out there. He got a little angry. He plays with passion. You know I don't mind that type of stuff.
You're just going to give them 15 yards.
Well,
they needed some help.
The punishment ended up giving them a touchdown.
Well, if you wouldn't got the penalty, you would have tackled them on the 15.
Yeah, that's all true.
We can argue this all day, so let's do it. Okay, no. More from Jared Goff. Rolls out, drops. Look at that pass to Cooper Kupp. Nice touchdown.
Man, New England about to trade 2 first-round picks for him. Nobody even going to laugh at the joke?
No, he's better. He's too good already. See, they take
the project. Well, how do you think I feel every day now?
My joke, that was timely. It was a little risque because there might have been a little racial politics there.
Nobody laughed.
Nobody laughed.
No, it wasn't funny. Moving on to – oh, Dusty did because you're paying him. Moving on to the Eagles and the Titans.
See, he's too busy thinking about the weekend.
Good news for Carson Wentz. He does not have to wonder how he will play in his first game back after injury because that was last week. And he played well enough to win. This week, his second start will come against the Titans, and he could get a much-needed spark if star receiver Alshon Jeffrey is able to suit up. But the Titans' defense, giving up just 16.7 points per game, second best in the league. Here's Carson on facing that tough Titans' D.
Yeah, they're good. You know, they're good. They fly around. A lot of veterans over there, so you can tell they're pretty smart, instinctual, adjust really well. They mix it up, you know, very multiple fronts, multiple coverages, do some different things. So we definitely got a challenge for us.
All right, CeCe, what do you want to see in this matchup?
Well, Carson Wentz made some good points about the Titans' defense. I was able to see it studying several games. And Mike Vrabel, first year there as a rookie head coach, never been a head coach before, is doing a good job. And they haven't been able to get good quarterback play.
You got to watch years now.
Yeah, you got to watch their secondary. I know Bill Belichick, smartest coach ever, but they got a cornerback named Malcolm Butler they gave a lot of money to, and he is playing good football for them. The people there, the general manager, John Robinson, former New England guy, very, very excited. They got several New England guys there. They do fly around to the ball. They get after the quarterback, very, very physical. So I believe Alshon Jeffries, this is the type of game. They play a lot of press and bump and run on the outside. Alshon Jeffries, those 50-50 balls, and be able to have a vertical threat for the Eagles. We haven't seen a consistent vertical threat since Nick Foles went on that 2-game run, NFC Championship against the Vikings, and the Super Bowl against the Pats. So I look for Carson to make that next step. The game will slow down. Last week, very excited. Also, tough conditions, raining before the game and during the game. You get Jeffries back. I look for the Eagles to have their best offensive output in this game against the Titans.
I know we're talking about this game because of Carson Wentz and because of the Eagles. I'm just going to spend a moment on the Titans because they were a playoff team last year, despite Mariota having an awful year. He went way backwards in year 3 from year 2. This year, they've had Blaine Gabbert start 2 games. Week 3, Mariota had to come in the game after Gabbert got hurt, despite not being able to grip the football properly, and they've won 2 games in a row. Week 3, they had both their tackles out, right?
Yes.
And they still found a way, albeit a defensive struggle, 9-6, to beat Jacksonville. We all focused on the giant upset Buffalo over Minnesota. They were 10-point dogs, and they beat Jacksonville. So the Titans' defense has been problematic for the majority of their opponents. That first game you were at was an odd game because of all the delays. Mm-hmm. But that Titans defense shut down Houston and it shut down Jacksonville. So the Eagles have their work cut out for them for an offense that statistically has struggled. But that's why I'm excited to see Carson Wentz. We saw it on that 17-play, 75-yard, I think 11-minute drive he had at the end of the game to beat the Indianapolis Colts, what he is able to do. And he had a fumble in that game. He had an interception in that game. But now that some of that rust, if not all of that rust, is gone, and he has Alshon Jeffrey back, I expect to see a fully functional Eagles team for the first time since week 13 against the Rams last year. I know they I know they won the NFC Championship game in the Super Bowl. They didn't have their left tackle. They didn't have Wentz. That team won despite the fact it wasn't fully functional. Now it is somewhat of all systems go despite some running back injuries. I'm excited to see what this Eagles team looks like against an underrated defense.
But do we think we're going to see a little bit more of the Carson Wentz of old? Do we think it's a game under his belt, the speed back, all the sort of getting it all, getting that routine back might
I mean, one game helps, but also when you come back after an injury like that, Odell, he gave us a little insight, told us, you know, hey, I thought I could have, but now after seeing the film, I know I had an extra gear to go to. These are injuries. Typically, it's going to take you a year and a half to be mentally. It takes you about 8 to 9 months to be over the injury, but about a year and a half to mentally be over the physical and mental things that athletes go through. But he has a better supporting cast with him, so we should see better. And if you get better weather, like, you can only do so much when it's raining. So, you know, a fumble or being a little careless with the football, those types of things, it's hard for the head coach to be aggressive when you're battling the elements and you're battling some rust of not playing.
And this is the second straight week that the Eagles are going to have such an advantage with their defensive line and their pass defense versus the other team's pass offense that it's not like Carson's in a situation where the Falcons-Saints game where you're going to have to go match scores. The Eagles, according to our friends of Pro Football Focus, have the number one pass rush in football. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't be surprising. I know the Titans are going to have their tackles back, but they're right now at a deficit at quarterback. Like, until Marcus Mariota, A, gets fully healthy, and B, shows me that year two was the real Marcus Mariota, not year three. The Titans are going to have to win running and defensive football, which Vrabel, to his credit, has gotten them to 2-1 doing.
And Rishard Matthews, their wide receiver, they spent money on from Miami. He's been there for 2 years, been their leading receiver. He called the team on Monday, said he didn't want to play football anymore. What the organization do? They obliged him. They released him. So you got a little team turmoil going there. They didn't have a whole bunch of weapons offensively. So it's going to be I'd like to see what they're going to do.
At least he didn't do it during the game.
No.
That would be some kind of weird.
Man, he's a wideout. We know it. Because if you quit at halftime, you might only get a half a check. I mean, we like to get paid.
Coming up, did the Vikings make a mistake signing Kirk Cousins in the offseason? That's next on First Things First. It's a college football doubleheader on Fox starting in the Big Ten with number 14 Michigan taking on Northwestern. Then number 11 Washington hosting 20th-ranked BYU. It all kicks off tomorrow at 4 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. We are going viral here on First Things First. Cavaliers guard Jordan Clarkson looking to bounce back from an underwhelming postseason. However, it's something off the court that has the internet buzzing. Take a look at this. Clarkson last year compared to this year.
Whoa!
A lot of tattoos.
I don't know what Jenna was saying, but that's fine.
Twitter user John Wolf joked that this is what happens when you spend a year on the roster with JR.
Oh, don't put that on JR. No.
A lot of tattooers.
JR got his tattoos when he was young. Like, this is...
See, that's why you just need just regular people in your life. I got a couple of my friends. I mean, they've been my friends since I was like 7, 8 years old. One's name's Dwight. Other one's name's Toogie. Man, see, if I come home or if I took a picture like that and send that to them, they would be on some type of transportation to be able to find me and beat the mess out of me. We told you was going to change. It took you a long time, but no, that right there, that's too much change. I mean, goodness gracious. Why don't you get one? Get one on your back. Get one on your bicep.
The neck is a big commitment.
I mean, I've seen him play basketball. He might have to get another job, like a real job.
That is the best point.
I mean, some of these other guys, they're not going to ever have to work. I can't assure you that.
Tattoos above the collarbone are a commitment to the game.
Next step.
He's a pro athlete or a different game. You're going to have to make your money doing that. And, man, Jordan, I watched you in the playoffs, bro.
Throwing soup was the joke. Time now for some stories to start your morning.
What was that?
Because like J.R. Smith, he got the tattoos. Next stop was...
Jenna's big on, if she has a joke,
I'm going to get it out.
Okay. Yeah. Even if
just like those bands were the best bands, Jenna's going to be the best comedian.
No, I'm not. But yours like, go on so long. Number 4, Ohio State will travel to play number 9, Penn State on Saturday. The two highest scoring offenses Both teams are undefeated. Three of the last four meetings have been decided by 7 points or less. See, what do you want to see on Saturday?
This is Ohio State's biggest rivalry. This team right here gives them more problems than any team in the Big Ten. It used to be Wisconsin. But with the quarterback that we have in Haskins, we have not been able to throw the ball since we won our last national championship. So this should be a great game. A whiteout, Penn State, man. October, is it October yet? On Saturday?
No.
Okay, no problem. But a late fall game in Penn State is always a treat.
Listen, Ohio State only a 3-point favorite. This is the toughest game that's on their schedule. This would be the toughest game they play until they get to the college football playoff if they get there. Man, I think not having Nicky Bosa in this game is critical. If Ohio State was fully functional, I would say I like them to win. I like them to win by at least a touchdown. I think this is closer to a coin flip game when the best player, I believe, in college football thus far this season is not going to be playing for Ohio State.
All right, moving on to the NFL now, one of the league's best rivalries.
Take the Buckeyes.
Ravens taking on the Steelers. Big implications for the AFC North as the Steelers' high-powered offense takes on that Ravens' stout defense. Nick, what are you looking for in this matchup Sunday night?
And I think for the Steelers to run away and hide, something they tried to do in their last game, and then they slowly but surely allowed Tampa back in the game in the second half. For the Steelers to put up big-time first-half points, I do not think the Ravens can match them, and then have the defense force Baltimore to have to pass and win that way, because I don't think Joe Flacco and the Ravens offense can catch up the way Tampa Bay did.
Yeah, Steelers defense, not very, very impressive. I look for Baltimore to add some wrinkles offensively. I look for Lamar Jackson to play his biggest role that he's played in the season in game number four. When you go out and acquire him, you're thinking about the future, but you're also thinking about how can I get this kid involved in some divisional games that I might be able to steal a couple wins. Look for him to get involved Sunday in Pittsburgh.
Baltimore the chance to go 3-1 if they can steal the win.
Moving on to the Green Bay Packers. They got some good news as Aaron Rodgers practiced in his first non-Saturday practice since his week one knee injury. The Packers will host the Buffalo Bills on Sunday. Remember those Bills coming off that big win over the Vikings. But CeCe, what's the ceiling for the Packers if Rodgers does stay healthy?
Oh, I mean, Aaron Rodgers, it's the setbacks to his knee, okay? Because we were shocked that he was able to play in the Vikings game and be able to make it the whole game. But I think that Aaron potentially didn't tell us. He might have a little setback after that game. It's great to see him out there on the field on Thursday. Ultimately, you'd love to have him there on Wednesday, but I look for Green Bay to get back on track. I don't believe they'll be asleep like the Vikings were when they played Buffalo last week. Tough trip, though, for Buffalo. Going to Minnesota, going way back with the win. I think they probably did some drinking during the week and then had to come back to Green Bay.
I have not changed my opinion that Buffalo is the worst team in the NFL. It makes the Vikings' loss all the more glaring. I think Green Bay wins this game and wins this game very comfortably.
All right, the Patriots are in unfamiliar territory as of late, trailing in their own division. Despite winning the AFC East 14 of the last 15 years, it's the Dolphins who are quietly making a run. 3-0 heading into Foxborough on Sunday. All right, Chris, what do you think the key to this matchup will be?
How do the Patriots deal with the Dolphins' speed? Like, if you haven't watched the Dolphins, paid attention, man, they got four or five guys that can flat out get it. And then they went out in free agency and brought him back home, Frank Gore. So not only do they have the speed, but they believe once they get the lead, they have the hammer in Frank Gore. Over 14,000 yards rushing, top five in NFL history. One day will be a Hall of Famer.
Wow. You're right on that. I don't think people realize what his numbers are. Top five all-time rushing, and you calling him a future Hall of Famer. As far as the Pats go, it's this. They have not lost a divisional home game that Brady's played the whole thing of the entire way in over 10 years. If they lose this game, it means it is not same old Pats. Okay. It is not same old situation. If they lose this game, sound the alarm bells, and we can start talking about potentially the end of an era. That's why I don't think they're going to lose that game.
All right, we will end with last night's Vikings-Rams shootout. Kirk Cousins looked great, finishing with 422 yards and three touchdowns, but he did have a costly fumble late. He now has five turnovers in four games for a Vikings team that currently sits at 1-2-1. Here is Kirk Cousins after the game.
If you don't bounce back, if you don't have an answer, you won't be in the league very long. So as much as, you know, we could say, hey, great job, you know, staying the course on the road, playing well, like, that's the only option we have. You know, that's our only choice. This league will chew you up and spit you out if you don't show up every week. So we felt like, you know, there was a huge sense of urgency, and I think we played that way.
You know, it's odd asking a question like this, but the Vikings gave Kirk Cousins $84 million guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Have they gotten their money's worth so far?
Oh, they've gotten their money's worth. The thing about it, we wouldn't have minded if Kirk Cousins, if he had those same amount of turnovers, but if they were just all interceptions. All right? He's fumbled the ball before. He doesn't have overly large hands. They throw the ball more in Minnesota, so people who are Minnesota fans, you think with Mike Zimmer, the defense is going to be dominant. Their quarterbacking has been very, very conservative, going back to Teddy Bridgewater when he got them into the playoffs. After that, all the other quarterbacks, Sam Bradford and Case Keenum, all these quarterbacks, they weren't going to let them throw 35 times. They were going to manage the game, manage their throws, win by the defense and their special teams. Now, with Kurt, they gave him the money, but they also gave him free reign. The Vikings are far more aggressive. They throw the ball down the field more. They don't have a great offensive line. You're going to back Kirk Cousins up. Now, you're going to be able to live with some of that risk. For me, that's something, as we go forward in the season, that he's got to be able to change. All right? We know they're better offensively, but they're not better as a team because their defense hasn't played as good. They can't overcome these turnovers. The Vikings' defense the last 5 years, they would have been able to overcome them. But right now, in four games, they have not been able to do that. And that's up to Kirk Cousins to be able to change. But, yes, he is worth the money. Battle down the stretch, tied the Packers there with Aaron Rodgers. Throw for throw. When you watch them, man, if you have not watched Kirk Cousins a lot, you're like shocked. Wow, wow, I didn't know that he could throw the ball that well. Yes, that's who he is as a quarterback. Thielen and Diggs on the outside. Man, you could see why they went out and decided to invest that $84 million in Kirk.
Thielen with four straight 100-yard games now to open a season.
Yes.
Cousins, in every game this year except Buffalo, he has made a few throws where you're like, wow. In week one, it was the touchdown to Stephon Diggs. In week two, it was the play, I forget who it was to, but it was down the near side of the field to get them back in that Packers game.
Yes.
And then in last night, there's a couple. There's one right there, and then there was one later to Aldrick Robinson where his tight end ran the wrong route.
Yep.
And he's right there.
Kyle
and
Rudolph drifted off into the third area.
I mean, he basically runs his man into coverage, mm-hmm. and he still makes the throw. But the fumbles are a problem. Who leads the NFL among all players in fumbles over the last 3 years? That guy.
Wow. Yes.
And so that is, his interception numbers have never been a huge issue, but those fumbles have been. And I get what you might say, okay, well, a fumble, you got about a 50% chance of recovering it, sure, but not typically on a quarterback fumble. Fumbles in the general field of play, it's a 50-50 proposition, but a quarterback fumble is different.
The linemen are all looking down the field. They are not expecting a fumble. And when you talk about ball security, one thing people think interceptions. But when the coaches teach that, they're taking interceptions and fumbles. And Nick makes a great point. When a quarterback fumbles it, the likelihood of you getting it back, and that's also a sack. So your numbers, you're tallied up for your sack. Teams create momentum on you. They know that those things. So Kirk Cousins, especially those wide rushers, he's got to be able to step up in the pocket more consistently to be able to avoid those fumbles in the pocket.
I worry that the Vikings are going to look back for a few weeks now at that Buffalo game. The schedule makers did them no favors. At Green Bay, at the Rams, at Philly in the first 5 weeks. You can't, when that's your schedule opening 5 weeks, you can't give away a home game against Buffalo.
It looks like they did look at that schedule, and they looked at Buffalo and said, whew, okay, so we can take a breather this week because we got a bunch of tough weeks.
Yeah, don't forget about Jimmy G, week number one.
Right.
You know, coming off the hype of last season, like it was going to be a brutal schedule.
Right.
For sure.
All right, moving on to the Carolina Panthers, who signed Pro Bowl safety Eric Reed to a 1-year deal. In 2016, Reed was the first player to kneel alongside then teammate Colin Kaepernick. And then this year, couldn't get a job. In May, the NFLPA filed a grievance with the NFL on Reed's behalf, saying the league colluded to prevent his employment because of his protests. Panthers GM Marty Herney said signing Reed was a football decision. Nick, what do you make of the news?
Thank goodness, because this was a black mark on an otherwise great league. This was an embarrassment. There was none of the nonsense reasons that Cap isn't in the league. We know why Cap isn't in the league. But at least people can say, oh, he's going to be too much media attention for a backup quarterback. Oh, we have a different system for a cap system. Oh, he's been out of football too long at this point. None of them applied to Eric Reed. He was young, relatively inexpensive, has made a Pro Bowl, healthy, at a position a lot of teams need. And he was on the street for one reason only. He knelt alongside Cap.
Mm-hmm.
And I will give the new owner of the Carolina Panthers, David Tepper, credit, because I do not think the former owner, Jerry Richardson, would have even considered allowing this. And by the way, one other small note. So it turns out, even if you do file a grievance collusion, a grievance for collusion against the league, doesn't make you ineligible to be signed. Because that's another thing on Cap. People say, well, the moment he filed that grievance, filed that lawsuit, he gave up any chance to play pro football again. Wasn't the case for Eric Reed. I am incredibly happy for him and for the league, because this was a bad look that this player was unemployed.
I know it was a football decision. Talking with their defensive coordinator, Eric Washington, and he talked about what I talk about all the time. NFL, they have these boards or they have these charts of players that are available, and they needed a safety this offseason. They spent money on a safety. And then they had some guys that they had drafted or guys there around that they wanted to see. So they actually had the people that they wanted to see. The guy they invested money in, he ends up getting hurt. The first guy on the board, when you start getting these checks, okay, he's gone. It was Eric Reed. It was really a football decision. I asked him that question. Is this about anything else? Is this about the new owner trying to make a splash? He's like, no. Is this trying to throw salt at Jerry Richardson? No, this is purely football. They didn't ask them one question about the national anthem. It really was about, we believe that you are dual safety. We believe you can cover tight ends. You can cover running backs. He can play in the box. They have a veteran safety in Adams. His 15th year in the league. So between him and Eric Reed, they'll have one of the veteran savvy safeties there where both of them can rotate. One play center field, the other play down in the box. They have enough video on him. They've played against him 3 times in the regular season, 1 time in the playoffs. They believe he's an outstanding player. They know people on the team who can vouch for his credibility on and off the field. He's a great family guy. He's a great community guy. The guy's never caused one type of rift in the NFL. And for me, the reason why I was upset was not because he kneeled besides Cap and got the same penalty as Cap. Is in America, you can't deny a person the ability to make money and take care of his family. And people just sitting there acting like that's okay. Like, we're going to just sit here and just watch this happen, and we're going to be okay with it. This was a guy who's done everything the right way. Ever since he went to LSU, it's been about football. It's been about the right things. And even when he took the knee next to Cap, it was about the right things. I'm glad Carolina made it about football and Eric Reed to be able to join this team who has taken a chance on some edge guys, guys who might not necessarily fit in. And Eric Reed is not one of those guys. It's truly about football, and he's looking to make it a contribution. Nick, you and I met with Cap.
That's what I was going to say.
Last week. And he said, you know, man, I know you guys, you guys bring me up on the show, you guys talk about it, but don't forget about Eric Reed.
He brought up Eric Reed. Chris and I, we haven't really talked about this, and I don't want to divulge too much because it wouldn't be respectful to Colin Kaepernick, but we sat with him for almost 3 hours.
Yeah, I meet with him about once a month.
And I want to say, brought up Eric Reed a half dozen times, multiple times, so many times that you took note of it. And his point was about this player, this person, not being able to create wealth for his family,
yeah,
for potential future generations, that being deprived of him for, he didn't break any rule. You also got to keep in mind, it's not like at any point the NFL or the Niners, even if it would have been unfair, came to him and said, you keep doing this, you're gone. He was doing what he thought, even if people disagree with it, he was doing what he thought was right. And it didn't hurt nobody, didn't harm nobody. And for him to, I thought he was done. I thought he was going to be on the same list as Cap, where he was unsignable. And so, in addition to the fact that he's a good player and the Carolina Panthers got better, it also removes what is a dark cloud hanging over the league.
And one thing fans should understand, too, as far as this offseason, The safety market that Eric was in, it was not a great safety market. There was not a lot of highly rated players. The salaries and everything
were all depressed.
So there was a different market for safeties this year in free agency than we've seen the last several years.
So if not, I don't know about UCC, but Nick, you said you didn't think you'd see Eric Reed play again, or at
Correct.
Least not this year, and he did. Do either of you think this might crack the door open even a little bit for the possibility that Cap might not be the next guy?
Here's what I know. I know that he works out 5 days a week. I know that Chris, like I mentioned, he's met with him a few times. This is my first time meeting with him. The guy is enormous and in great shape, and clearly the one, like, He wants to play football, and he's better than the quarterback that is going to be starting for his former team this week, C.J. Beathard. But we've known that for a long time. We've had Nathan Peterman. Tom Savage is getting more tryouts. And the fact that Cap is not, no. I think that door, unfortunately, and sadly and unjustly, is closed. I think Cap represents too much to too many people in order for the league, for him to get a shot in the league again. But Eric Reed, justifiably, is getting another chance. Yeah.
Michael Kendricks facing a couple different felonies,
pled guilty to him.
Signed with Seattle. Seattle said, oh, we'll work it out wherever the NFL decides later on. So to me, this is what I'm going to do. Cap wants to play football, and this is a league that I know has been better than what they are now. I'm just believing one day they're going to come to their senses. Cap should be playing. Anytime you're the San Francisco 49ers, your quarterback is gone, and you know that you are not making the best decision for your football fans and the football team, and they know it. They can lie, and their nose is growing just like it is, like the nose on my face. Cap should be playing in the NFL, just like Eric Reed should be playing. And the question to him shouldn't be, are you going to kneel on the national anthem? The question be, man, how can we utilize your skill to be able to help the team be the best team for the 2018 season?
All right, we got to take a break. Much more First Things First right after this. Chris, the number one overall pick, will make his first career start Sunday against the Raiders. The Browns right now are riding high.
How high are they, Jenna?
One game win streak.
Real high.
Solamente uno. With Baker getting all first-team reps and an extended week.
No,
I don't
Solamente.
So. Yeah. Solamente. I'm sorry.
Stick
Mr.
to your British accent.
Espanol.
You're better in English.
Wow.
And
still
French.
Working on
okay.
That.
French. Hopes. For, you know, I. God. Hopes are high for the rookie.
He's
CC.
Available.
Wow.
CC.
Very.
But he's not.
I'm here for you.
What are the keys for Baker in his first career start against the Raiders? Let's talk Baker Mayfield. All right, I see. Chris, answer.
Let's talk Baker Mayfield. Let's get to it.
Let's just say words. Go start speaking.
Here's what it is, Jenna.
Talk to me.
Just don't make any mistakes. And I know that you can't.
Oh, that's a tall order.
No, listen, he's a rookie quarterback. I don't want Baker Mayfield going out there trying to do too much in his first start on the road. So you had a long week, a long time to prepare for this game. Just don't make any mistakes. Because the other quarterback, he's going to give your defense plenty of opportunities to make plays on the ball and steal possessions. Derek Carr is tied for the most interceptions in the NFL. Now, keep in mind, in their three losses this season, they had a lead at point in the second half. So, I mean, Derek Carr hasn't played well this year. He's got all those turnovers. You look at what he's done. He's got three of those interceptions in the fourth quarter of the five that he's thrown this season, and they've been outscored 37-3 in the fourth quarter. So if you're Baker Mayfield, just don't make those mistakes. Be good in sudden change. Now, he got away with one in that Jets game. There was a sudden change after the Robbie Anderson fumble, and then Baker Mayfield threw one in the end zone. Doug Middleton should have caught it from the Jets, but he dropped that interception. Baker Mayfield's just got to take care of the football on the road. That's the biggest thing that I want him to do in his start.
And when you mention the Raiders and Derek Carr this year's propensity for turning the ball over, should be noted, no team's forcing more turnovers than Cleveland. Now, you might say, oh, well, they got six in the first game. Fine. They got five in the two games since then.
Yep.
They
yep.
have forced 11 turnovers this mm-hmm. year. So even if the Pittsburgh game is an outlier game, they have repeatedly forced turnovers of their opponent. We saw it last week against the Jets. We saw it in their week two game against New Orleans. Like, this is a team that is, I believe, very good defensively because they can make game-changing plays, turnovers and sacks. Now, they're 30th in the NFL offensively. So that's why they make the change at quarterback. That's why number six is getting to start. I think the Browns are better than the Raiders, flatly. I think right, I can't right now say Baker's already better than Derek Carr, but I don't think he has to be in order for them to be able to go on the road and win this game.
Yeah, I think after four games, too, John Gruden is going to really, really been like, man, you know something? I've been doing television. That football looked a lot easier when I was
up there.
Like, it looks a lot easier. I believe this can be a monumental game for the Raiders. Mm. To be able to lose at home to a rookie quarterback, I believe it would hurt them as far as emotionally. John Gruden, when we started the season, Nick, you pointed this out to me. I was like, nah, there's no way. They got the oldest roster in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, you lose four games with a bunch of old guys. Now, it's different. You got a bunch of young guys. Hey, we happy? We're just – you lose with a bunch of old guys. I know what old guys do. Oh, it's his fault. His fault. It ain't me. It's her fault. It's a, you know, and that's what you're going to start to see. We've seen that with Gruden. Yeah. He's already pointed the fingers a couple times. Now, as veteran players, you start thinking about, man, my career, you know, people are looking at me, my own personal brand. Like, so it can become an issue. Baker Mayfield, I'm not worried like you about the interceptions. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to put that on a guy that was not him. Kirk Cousins in Washington, what'd he do? Fumbled the football. Mm-hmm. When Minnesota, was he doing? Fumbled the football. Baker Mayfield, what'd he do? Efficient as a quarterback, dinking the ball off and also driving the football down the field because he's such a smart quarterback. I think a lot of coaches and all the coaches that I always had with me, I used to tell them, don't coach that way. Because when you coach timid, you coach scared, it goes right into the quarterback. And then those young kids who used to have confidence, they start playing like the coach coached them in coaching scared. I don't believe Todd Haley. When Baker came into the game, he coached aggressive. And I believe that they're going to go after this Raider because they don't have to worry about that edge pressure that normal young kids are going to have. But let's coach aggressive. The kid came into the league. He took care of the football. Let's trust him to be able to take care of it in the NFL.
I agree with you. I think the less conservative approach, we saw that, and you brought it up a lot, what Todd Haley was doing with Tyrod Taylor, which he wasn't opening it up for him at all. Mm-hmm. As you saw, as soon as Baker went in, that game changed a lot more downfield. And I think it's something I will not forget Andy Reid said about Patrick Mahomes early on in the preseason when he said, this guy's so talented. I'm okay with a couple of mistakes. I want to see what his potential is. Like, let me open him up, see what his arm can do, because if you start restricting him and just giving him a little bit, he might not develop as quickly, and I'm just wondering if that's something that you think Baker might fall into as well.
Well, I don't want you guys to confuse what I'm saying. I'm not saying restrict Baker Mayfield. I think that you have more of the playbook open if you have Baker Mayfield as your quarterback as opposed to Tyrod Taylor. My thing is, I just want Baker to take what the defense gives him. Because that Raiders defense is going to give you plenty of opportunities. And on the other side of that coin, I think Derek Carr has struggled this year just because he understands that offense has to win the day with that Raiders team because they're not very talented defensively.
Yeah, I think I misinterpret that. So also, too, what you're saying is, man, you're the face of the franchise. You got the whole season.
You're the highest paid player on this team.
You're going to be playing next week. Okay, like, because when you come in and you're subbing, there's a certain amount of adrenaline and looking at the scoreboard, oh, man, we're down. Yeah. So we have to go right now. What Canty is saying is take what the defense gives you. You're playing the whole game. Get involved in the chess match of the game. Okay, I can accept
and,
that right
and
there.
And just know your defense is going to give you short fields. They're going to create field position. They're going to create extra possessions. So you'll have more opportunities. You don't have to force a ball into coverage when Derek Carr's probably looking at it and saying, I've got to take that chance just because I know my team's not going to have a chance to win unless I can make that play.
And amazingly, and I'm saying this about the Browns, if it's close late, you have to love their chances because it's not the Raiders this year have scored 3 fourth quarter points. That's last in the league. And they've allowed, as you were saying, 37 fourth quarter points. That's last in the league. Ooh. So they are scoring. Wow. It's 37-3. That's last on both ends of the spectrum. So they've got to feel like if you're Cleveland, if we're tied going into the fourth, the game is ours. Meanwhile, Oakland, to your point, has had leads going into the fourth quarter, and they've lost every time anyway.
Meanwhile, somewhere out there, Gruden's still going, if we could only get a pass rusher, everything would be better.
No, he's just saying that so y'all know it ain't his fault.
Yeah,
that's what that is. Mm. That's what that
is. Stick around. Chris, coming up, can the Cowboys offense finally start clicking on Sunday next? First things first. Fox Sports 1 is your destination for the day's best sports shows. Tune in for the biggest personalities on the biggest stories. Of course, we get you started right here with First Things First. You can catch it all right here, Monday through Friday on FS1. Back here with Chris Caney. Hey, pardon the broken record here, but the Cowboys' offense is bad. Dak Prescott is 31st in the league in passing yards per game. Ezekiel Elliott has been underutilized, and it won't get easier Sunday against the Lions' number one pass defense. But Cowboys offensive coordinator Scott Linehan says Dallas is ready to sling it around. All right, Chris Carter, start with you on this. What do you make of Scott Linehan saying he wants the Cowboys to sling it around on Sunday?
I thought he really meant like some Texas stuff, like they're going to stop slinging bull or something, like against the wall or something. Like, I mean, I don't know what they
Steven sticks. Hey,
I mean, what they slinging out there in Dallas?
Trying to lasso something?
Because that's the opposite of what the strategy should be this week.
Oh, any week.
Thank you.
I mean, unless they play the Saints in week number 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, by week 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17, they shouldn't be slinging the ball. What they should, now, if that means pitching it to Zeke and I'm messing up, maybe there's an interpretation of words or something, I'm messing, but no, this is direct opposite of what they should have been doing. No, man, man, anytime the coaches or the owners say anything in Dallas, I get upset because 99% of all the players need a system. Zeke don't need a system, but he need people with common sense. Tyron Smith, the left tackle, he don't need a system. And he's an elite, a rare talent. The rest of those guys need a system. Those wide receivers, I mean, if they need a system, I mean, they really do. Like, you can't go into the game saying we're going to sling. You go into a game and say, what are my best chances to win the game? And you break it down. We're going to have 65 plays. What's my best chance to move the football, score the football? And it's giving the ball to 21. And the after 25 times, Nick has taught me this. Mm-hmm. Dak Prescott, man, that his game goes the other way. 0-25, he's good.
10-0 if he throws 25 or fewer passes in his career. If you throw out the Week 17 game a couple years ago where he didn't play a full game, they're 10-0. And in the other games, I think it's 11-13 if he's at 25 plus.
So if that's slinging it, Scott Linehan, Scott, I know you. You can call some good plays around this at several places. Detroit, Minnesota, you built up a reputation. Now you're in Dallas Lions. You can't sling the ball, man. They weren't even slinging the ball when they had Witten and Dez. Now, if he had those teams and he came out and said, you know something, in this game, this week, we got to sling the ball. I'd be like, okay, maybe this week. But those guys, okay, I might be. Man, stop. Then stop playing. Stop tripping. Let's tell the truth. Yeah, you're a running, grinding out team, and your quarterback is best when he's managing the game.
Absolutely right, CC. And the Lions have the best pass defense in the NFL, and that's only because the opposing teams realize you can run the football against the Detroit Lions. Glover Quinn said it himself. We got the worst run defense in the NFL. And what do you happen to be able to do very well if you're the Dallas Cowboys?
Run the ball.
You can run the football. Use that stretch zone running scheme. That's exactly what the Detroit Lions defensive front struggles with. This is a no-brainer to me. If you look at Dak Prescott's last 11 games, he's only got two of them where he's over 200 yards passing. He's got 8 touchdowns to 11 interceptions. He's not what you need to be focused on when trying to game plan. It needs to run through Ezekiel Elliott. He came into this weekend leading the NFL in rushing, but he's only 7th in attempts. Now, how does that make sense to me?
Nick,
it doesn't.
Please, teach us. Say something that makes some sense.
Well, I'm going to actually say something that doesn't make any sense, because here's a quote from Cole Beasley that was in the paper this morning, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, that I didn't see until 15 minutes ago, but part of our great staff brought it out to me, about the receivers. Quote, "We're just getting open. That's all we can do. If you watch the tape, that's all you've got to do. A lot of people aren't watching the tape. They're just assuming that's fine. It's been working. You feel it. We're moving the ball. I don't know if it's that they're changing their defense or what, but it's working." Okay. That can only be interpreted as one thing, which is, hey, where's Dak Prescott?
Yeah.
Oh, he just got the Dallas truck backed up over. We're getting open. That's all we can do. The we there is Cole Beasley and those other receivers. Now, I don't know if Cole's correct, by the way. Maybe he is. I haven't studied the tape the way he has. But whether he's right or not, that is an indictment of the quarterback. That is an indictment of, and by the way, all of this is alleviated by if they're throwing the ball less and running Zeke. I mean, the numbers are outrageous. They have the fourth fewest attempts on first down running the ball, but they're averaging 7 yards per run when they do it. Like,
the goal is still 10 yards the first down, right?
Yes.
Okay, they move them? They move the chain after that?
No
sense. What's the thing you say when you have – just try the logical answer to the question before you move on to B, C, and D.
You keep failing a test without ever trying the easiest solution. Like, I don't understand. See if that one works and keep going to it until it stops working, or else what you're going to have is Scott Linehan saying sling the ball around, Cole Beasley saying we're getting wide open, ball's just not finding us. Like, all of that is bad for Dallas when Zeke somehow is leading the league in rushing.
Yeah.
I also got to remind you, too, because Scott Linehan, Scott, that was a gem. But let's go back a couple weeks. Jerry Jones said that his quarterback was a combination between
Russell Wilson.
No,
Jared Goff, pardon me, and Cam Newton.
And Cam Newton. Okay, we know Cam's big, all right? Now, unless Dak's going to hit some type of amazing growth spurt, we know he's not going to be the body or the runner that Cam is. Did y'all see Jared Goff last night? Was my TV broke?
Yeah, perfect passer rating, 5 touchdowns.
Give me a number of carries you want to see. You want to see from Zeke.
Greater than 16, because that's what they've been doing.
Greater than 16.
I think that's the equation.
So when we talk about this again Monday, we want to see a number more than 16. How many times they're asking him to run the ball?
He needs to have 20 to 25 rush attempts. Now, I'm not just talking about touches. I'm talking about just hand it off to Ezekiel Elliott and go. Then that's going to open up opportunities in the passing game. And I'm not saying you can't utilize him as a receiver. Throw him some swing passes. Use that as an extension of the run game. But Dak Prescott has already proven that he hasn't evolved as a passer where you can lean on him to win you the football game. When he's got 25, 30 attempts, that's not the formula for the Dallas Cowboys to have success. It's Ezekiel Elliott rushing the ball 20 to 25 times a game. And then maybe that opens up opportunities to take shots down the field like they did early in that Giants game to Tavon Austin. Those are the big plays that you're looking for, but you're not going to consistently get those opportunities unless you give Zeke the attempts.
That's when you can sling it. Thanks for joining us today, Chris Kenny.
I gave her too many compliments.
I got excited. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.